Slump, dread, sob, despair.
This is the Extra Hot Grape Podcast, episode 326 for the week of October 26, 2020. I am the undoing hey sing David T. Cole, and I'm here with classical music fallacy Sarah D. Bunting.
More like Vival Death, am I right?
Wig cop Tara Ariano.
I'm a wig social worker now, but I am here to cancel you.
And proud Equinox nudist Emily Yoshida.
I'm not threatening anybody, am I?
Welcome to Extra Hot Great. Returning for the first time since we made her talk about the society.
Oh my goodness.
Hello, Emily.
Why do you still know us?
Listen, guys, we live in a society. Even though the society is gone, we still live in a society. So.
Yay for society.
We do. Oh, the society. One of the unrenewed. So sad.
Wasn't that an early COVID casualty?
Yes, it was. It was renewed and then it was unrenewed.
Wait, we talk about society or society that
should... Both. Okay.
It all works in this case.
We are not here to talk about the society this time. We are here to talk about The Undoing, HBO's new limited series, which reteams Nicole Kidman and David E. Kelly. In The Undoing, Grace and Jonathan Fraser, played by Kidman and Hugh Grant, respectively, have a perfect Upper East Side life, fancy careers, son in the right school, important roles at the right fundraisers. Then the mother of a new scholarship student gets murdered, and Jonathan suddenly disappears. And was it actually all as perfect as it seemed? Spoiler, no. So only the first episode has aired. We got spoilers for the screeners for the first five. Some of us have watched ahead. We'll be careful about plot spoilers for future episodes. Let us do the Dave Chen check-in first, go around the circle. Emily Yoshida, should people watch The Undoing?
You guys know that I work in this industry now. I'm like on the other side of the fence in a weird way, but
right.
I'm going to keep it real with everybody and say that I don't think it's worth your time necessarily.
Okay.
Unless you're like really into this, unless you are, and we can get into this later. Mm-hmm. If you're really into like Lifetime movies, then you should watch it, I guess, but that's what this is. So if you think that it's like an HBO, you know, highbrow-ish, Big Little Lies-ish type thing, you might be unpleasantly surprised.
Okay, Dave wanted to go next. Dave.
Well, you know that joke where you go to the doctor and you only got 6 months to live, so you're like, you're going to move to Alabama kind of thing, you know, those kind of things. I feel like if you want time to expand for you, you definitely want to watch The Undoing because this is like a 10-pound bag with like 2 ounces of Law and Order in it.
Okay. Well, that's a good segue to Sarah D. Bunting, our Law and Order expert. Sarah, what do you think?
David T. Cole incisively tweeted the other day, I think, yesterday maybe, it all runs together, that the first two episodes of this were like the first 7 minutes of a Law and Order. And that's the thing, like, maybe it's okay for, as Emily said, people who enjoy Lifetime movies, except it's like this taffy pulled Lifetime movie. Like if you hate read Vanity Fair to see what dumb shit rich people are getting up to, this is like the scripted for no judgments. We, you know, many of us do.
Sure.
Is my answer. No.
And Tara?
I mean, I feel like, I agree with all of you. You're not wrong. And yet the end of each episode, I watched three, and the end of each one was enough of a cliffhanger that was like, damn it. Now I have to see what happens next.
Like, oh, Tara. Yeah. You're like going to the bad restaurant that gives you a really good dessert. And you're like, I got to go back there someday.
I mean, is that not me?
Yes.
Right? So,
That's exactly it. Like, it is really craftily crafted to keep you being like in my notes, I would be like, if the following character beat does not occur, like in the next 10 minutes, mm-hmm. I'm done. And then something would happen to suck me back in. Mm-hmm. But after, like, at the end of episode three, I was finally like, you know what? This is abusive. I don't have to be here. So I quit.
I'm not going to tell anyone else to do it, but I will say I probably will continue watching it.
Well, the last one of the episodes that we watched was genuinely freaked the shit out of me. Like, okay. I like jumped, like I got like a real like chill down my spine. And so I'm like, do I need to like stick around and watch the fifth one now just to see what happens? Cause like, and I had that, you know, I had that to a lesser degree with the ones before. I mean, they were still kind of like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
But this last one was like genuinely scary to me. And I was like, oh God, where's this going?
Okay.
But
all right. Yeah. So let's say we're out of the Chen check-in zone now. Okay. We're just freely talking about mostly as much as we can episode one, since that's the only one that has aired.
Very good.
Okay, so on one level, it does feel like a very entry-level question to ask why Nicole Kidman and David E. Kelly would want to make their next collaboration another crime drama based on a book set in and around a school for the children of the rich, just as a much less wealthy mother has enrolled her child there, but why would they? Emily, did you feel this was a wild or at least meaningful departure from Big Little Lies? You already have said it felt like not as good, but did you feel like this was...
No, yeah, It's not about anything. Like Big Little Lies, even in its kind of campy way, is about sort of these, I don't know, like it's more pointedly about this sort of bubble getting burst a little bit and the kind of gossipy nature, like the kind of Greek chorus that they have in Big Little Lies is a big part of like, it tells you what the show is about and why it's about this specific milieu of rich people, aside from just the comforts and niceties of watching rich people and looking at nice houses. This one, I'm still like, you know, we watched five episodes and I'm still like, why do we care about these people and what's being said about them with this film? None of that is clear to me. And it just feels really muddled, and it just feels like it's kind of arbitrarily about rich people on the Upper East Side when it could have been about almost anybody. But I don't know.
I felt like maybe it was about the wrong people on the Upper East Side. Like, it's so Big Little Lies-y that you even have the Reese Witherspoon in Lily Rabe form. But like, make it about Lily Rabe's character. Lily Rabe, and this is nothing against Nicole Kidman, I enjoy watching her. She is always at least competent. Her wigs are compelling viewing. We will, you know, we'll go back to Tara on that point in a moment. But like, Lily Rabe is just automatically the most interesting person on screen for me, usually, with the exception of my schoolmate, Maria Dizia. Hey, M. Diz, glad you're working. But yeah, it's just like, what, like, show us something that's different. Like, there were so many ways this could have been more interesting. Like, it's the, you know, Rabe Chronicles. It's like some kind of time lapse. It's anything but all these shots of Nicole Kidman looking hunted that I just feel like she could do without being awake.
It's sort of like, hey, you like Big Little Lies. You like all these kind of outsized different versions of like entitled white women and getting into scraps together. But like, what if you took away all of the most interesting and fun ones and it's just like the haunted one?
Yeah, I feel like they had to make this either darker than it ended up being to make it different from Big Little Lies, or just make more bigger, littler lies because it's not satisfying in the same way.
I want to tell you guys something, because like this, I think this colored my experience of viewing it, because once I knew that we were doing this for the episode, I kind of purposely kept myself away from much information about what the story was or anything. I mean, I knew it was about like, you know, a wife finds out something about her husband. I was joking to somebody. It's like she finds out that he's a character in a television show like that. That's the arc of the plot. But I, for some reason, had caught wind of something that made me think that what the secret was like, he was like a war criminal or was like responsible for like the death of millions or a genocide or something like that. Like, I had this idea that he, like, the buried secret was something of like a global atrocity scale. And so when it turns out to just be like a murder, even though obviously, yes, it's a grisly murder, etc. She was tortured and it was a chat. She was beautiful and tragic and died. But like, I was just expecting something so much bigger. So I was like, oh, it's a murder. Okay.
Oh, he was a man who needed to be canceled.
Yeah. Oh,
fresh.
But the whole like series that we watched so far, it just gave me very 90s thriller vibes. Like it felt like, when you watch something like Presumed Innocent today and how it feels dated and slow and kind of plodding and predictable in its own, everything now is heightened, back then aren't we quaint kind of way, I got from this. And it just wasn't enough of enough, you know, to really grab you, especially, you know, when you compare it to the last project they did.
Yeah, I agree. And even on like a basic level, like from the first second that you see Nicole Kidman and Hugh Grant together, like I realize that part of the story is like, oh, everything is not what it seems and their marriage is not so great. Did not buy them as a married couple, even when things are supposed to be good. Like, I don't get their chemistry. Obviously, they are both pros. I think he's really good. I don't think her performance here is that great. I mean, saying like there's so many shots of her looking hunted, that's pretty much what it all boils down to in like so much of this. I don't get it. I don't get what she's
part of the opening credit sequence and a lot of the plot twists in these first five episodes and I don't think this is a spoiler because I think this is like in the literal opening credits, like are leading you to believe that she's sort of willfully forgetting or not conscious of a lot of stuff that's going on around her, or stuff that she's doing. Like she's kind of got blinders on to it. But like that as the defining character trait of your main character makes for just sort of this like a fugue state of a person, which doesn't, you know, it doesn't grab you for much longer than like an hour.
The wig.
Yes. On to more compelling matters.
They had Nicole Kidman do a takeover of the HBO Twitter feed on Sunday night. And the first question was, which of your Grace's looks was your favorite to wear? And by looks, I mean wigs. And it was not from me, by the way, although I was also wondering. And she answered it and she said, I always approach it from what the character is feeling. And the green coat represented protection, escape, comfort. She does have beautiful coats, by the way. It took on so many meanings. I was really glad Suzanne Beer encouraged me to have red wild curls. Like, okay, it's interesting that that was a choice you arrived at together, because I sort of felt like making her go back to like the look of her hair from the beginning of her career was sort of mean.
Yeah. Specifically from like Eyes like Wide anymore. Shut.
Yeah.
Like the other, you know, Manhattan, unhappy married Manhattan woman.
Exactly. Yeah.
I didn't register that this is a wig. Am I an idiot? Like, I mean, her, just because it is, I think of that as being Nicole Kidman's hair. The wigs in Big Little Lies are much more obvious, and other wigs she's had in other film roles are more obvious to me. This, I was just like, oh, her hair looks fantastic. Like, but I didn't.
I mean, they're really good wigs.
It's
they're
a not good like, wig, or, but know, it's
only the best.
Florix. they're good.
Yeah. This is all
their budget since Big Little Lies for the wigs.
Yeah.
Well, they didn't have as many to outfit, I guess. There aren't as many ladies that need their hairs covered, so that helps. This is also the first TV series that Suzanne Beer has directed since The Night Manager, and I guess they can't afford Elizabeth Debicki anymore, but she would have fit in so well with all of the moms, I thought. But, you know. Maybe they gave her part, or what would have been her part, to Lily Rabe, which is probably fine too.
Oh, Elizabeth Debicki. She should just be in everything.
I agree. She'll be in The Crown soon enough, but yeah.
What did you guys think of Night Manager? Were you guys into that when it was on?
Yeah, we liked it.
Yeah, like maybe in the inverse of this, perhaps. I don't know. I was so in on it for like most of it. And then I remember the ending, and I can't even remember the specifics of the ending being a big letdown. I don't think I'm that big of a fan of like whatever the Suzanne Beer thing is. I don't know. It feels very mushy to me. Mushy in a, like an unclear way. Like I'm not really sold on her as a director.
I mean, especially by the time we, spoiler, like get inside of a jail. Like, her style does not really match the night of setting so much, I felt. Well, sounds like we all agree this is a shrug mostly, but, you know, it's very well outfitted at least, and there is some real estate porn to covet. So if that's something that you're missing post Big Little Lies, that it may fill that gap for you.
Well, you guys, I profiled Hugh Grant while he was shooting this in Manhattan, across the street from, I guess, where their apartment is. On the show, like, so it's really funny because all those establishing shots, I'm like, that's at least accurate. Like, that's exactly where they were shooting and where he was staying. And it was. I mean, I love Hugh Grant, and I actually had, it's one of those things where you profile somebody and you have an even greater appreciation for them after it. And I kind of wish, I almost wish it was more about him, this show. I hate to say I wish it was more about the man, but I kind of do. I wish he wasn't the mystery box character here, because it's, I don't know, it's just confusing.
Yeah, I agree. He seems to be bringing it more than she is, certainly.
All right, it's time to go around the dial. First up, Tara.
I have a briefie and a longie. First, Adam Grossworth, past and future guest of the show, texted me last week to say, Archer is good again. And so we watched it, and he's right. Archer is good again. After several extremely high-concept, gimmicky seasons, they've gone just back to they're in the office, they're doing spy stuff. It's the Archer that you knew from the early seasons again.
Yeah, it's exactly the Archer you knew. It's not.
And they're like calling it out, like, oh, everything is back to how it used to be.
But insofar that I don't really find it funny. It's just so, like, it's okay and it's comforting and it's got a rhythm that you know, but like it doesn't hit you like the first season did when you first watched it, or when Frisky Dingo or something like that. There's no surprises.
That's true. It's not, this doesn't have the same the feeling of discovery as the first season of Archer, but it's back to being a show that you can enjoy in a way that you might not enjoy Archer in Space, which, I mean, maybe you did. We didn't, because we didn't watch those seasons. So the finale is airing tonight, if you're listening to this, the day it comes out. So that is all on FX on Hulu. So you can check that out. Now, my longie. Supermarket Sweep. So in our last Patreon episode, where we talked about peak TV and...
Can we just pause for a second? I just want to preface by saying Supermarket Sweep, brought to you by Enemy of Capitalism, Tara Ariano. Proceed.
I'm going to get into that as well. So we were talking in our last Patreon episode, if you are not a Patreon subscriber, about how we're probably on the downslope of peak TV, meaning there are going to be fewer scripted shows. And what is probably going to happen as there's smaller, less platforms and smaller budgets is that there's going to be more shows where the idea is we're not programming niche stuff anymore. It's going to be shows that are everything for everyone. And with that in mind, I thought I would make a bigger effort to use the segment to consider shows that may become emblematic of that coming wave of TV. So I watched ABC's revival of Supermarket Sweep. I guess this is my opportunity to come out as a dumb bitch because I love it. I can't comment on how it compares to the version of the show from the 90s and the early 2000s because I don't think we got it in Canada.
That's a shame. That is a damn shame, and you should try to find it.
Well, that was also a remake because the original premiered in 1965. Even I am not that old, but it seems to be a cult hit. Apparently, a bunch of it just went up on Netflix this summer, and I can see why people like it. The games are super simple and stupid. The centerpiece of the show involves people hauling ass around a grocery store set, trying to tally up the highest bill in the time that they've earned from the games. The audience for the show is children, people who are stoned, and me. Apparently, so I've probably never had occasion to talk about this on this podcast before. I love grocery shopping. Like, I really love it. As soon as I could drive, my parents would just, like, give me their debit card and I would do the grocery shopping for the family. One of the dumbest things I missed during the pandemic is going shopping with Dave because he also likes it. When we lived in Toronto, we used to, like, drive to Wegmans in Niagara Falls, New York and go to Wegmans because we loved it that much. And it was, like, a 3-hour round trip. Anyway, the show is extremely my shit, even though I'm famously brand loyal. I only know what some things cost because they can charge whatever they want for, like, the bread I like or Tide. I will just pay it. which is why it would be bad on Price is Right. But anyway, this show started out delighting me by using Push It by Salt-N-Pepa as its theme song over a graphic treatment of Leslie Jones pushing a shopping cart, which I was like, oh, I see what they did there. She's the host. She's a joy. The week before this premiered, she gave an interview where they asked if she missed being on SNL, and she was like, not really, because that job has stupid hours and is really hard. Like, hell yeah, work smarter, not harder, Leslie Jones. I get it. She's very obviously a fan of the show, having a blast. She's an executive producer as well. She also barely makes any effort to appear impartial with the contestants. You can tell which ones she likes the most, which is fun, because based on what I've seen, we have hated the same ones. The one in the first episode, there were these two moms that were a team, and they were like, between us, we have 9 kids. And she was like, that's too many. And as I was saying the same thing. Anyway. I assume the show cost the production company $0, since the games, such as they are, revolve around saying the names of national brands. Some of them even involve putting, like, the actual logos on the screen. And I imagine the brands pay for this placement, because I don't know otherwise how Nature Valley would be in 2 out of 2 episodes of the show. Fucking Nature Valley, the granola Nature bar Valley. People.
Crumbs everywhere.
Exactly. This should bug me, as Dave said. The show is so idiotic, though, that I can't even get mad.
The show, you know those commercials that pop up sometimes for power brands or something like this? Like,
brand power.
Yeah, brand power. Bum, 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 bum. It's basically that, but a half an hour long.
Yeah, it is. To be very clear, it's no holy moly, but the big sweep, which is the part where everyone is like running around the store like crazy trying to fill up their carts, it's extremely satisfying to me. Sunday nights are loaded with smart, fancy shows that make you sad. I appreciate the dumb bitches like me now have this alternative. So Supermarket Sweep is on ABC Sunday nights. If this is your shit, check it out. Dave is disgusted with it. I wish you could see his face.
Garbage. But anyways, I just want to say that there was a Canadian version of it. It ran from 93 to 95.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was a adaptation of the original American version.
So, oh, yeah. The set there was store a Canadian was so set. Small.
Yes, yeah. Browse the IGA in your local small town.
So many Dare cookies. Anyway, for my plugs, that story that I was talking about last week with regard to the Conners and other quarantine shows is now up at Primetime, or so we'll link that in the show notes. And I went on the / Filmcast to talk about the Borat sequel, and that will be up by the time you hear this. It will be up right now, so you can check that out as well, and we will link that too.
All right, Emily, your turn.
Oh, it's my turn.
Yeah.
So I have been, for a project that I'm working on, I've just been lately immersing myself in a lot of martial arts movies and also some favorite anime from way back. And so I've been rewatching this show, Revolutionary Girl Utena, which is on Funimation. I went in and got my trial for Funimation. We'll see if I remember to cancel it. I've had it before, I feel like I like cycle through all of the different anime streaming channels. But I know that this is maybe a little off the beaten path for some of your listeners, but some of them are also cheering right now because this is like a very like beloved cult show from the 90s. And it is so fun and so bananas. And I would recommend it as much for people who want to check out some 90s anime as much as people who like love surrealist comedy. Because the sense of humor in it. So it was directed by this director, Kunihiko Ikuhara, who directed my favorite season of Sailor Moon, which I also like for similar reasons. It is very dramatic and also extremely funny and weird. And I feel like a lot of my sense of humor comes from that season of television. And Utena is like, so it's about this girl who goes to this insane academy where the students all wear what are they called, epaulettes, and like it's like very kind of it's very Euro sort of like military academy-ish. But it's supposed to just be a normal school, I guess. But then there's a student council at this school that is sort of like a secret society, and they all wear these rings with roses on them and duel each other from time to time. And whoever is most recently won a duel is officially engaged to this girl named Anthe, who is the quote-unquote rose bride. It doesn't really make a whole lot of sense at first. You kind of just have to go with it. it. But it's this kind of awesome sort of, you know, like it's hard to call things like queer in anime because there is so much stuff that like to a Western audience reads as that, but it's just sort of like, just very like gender bendy and kind of, androgynous and like, you know, everybody kind of has a crush on everybody in it, which makes it really kind of fun and chaotic. And everybody's just majorly over the top, melodramatic about everything. But the main character Utena is like this girl who, you know, she's kind of a tomboy and she refuses to wear the girls' uniform at school. So she's the one girl who wears the boys' uniform and all the girls have a crush on her. And she just like gets in these duels every episode. And there's this crazy incestuous, aristocratic couple that's in the student council that are very like Cersei and Jaime Lannister. it's just shockingly funny sometimes. It's really fun. I would recommend it. So that's been my kind of fun revisit, and I in general love that era of anime anyway. It's very nostalgic and fun to me. But you guys, I also recently binged The Morning Show.
Yeah.
A show that I watched the first episode of, I think around the time it came out. And I don't even think I got through the first episode of it. I will admit, I think, and this is coming from somebody, I don't know if you remember, Tara, big Newsroom fan here.
Yeah.
Like, followed it avidly all the way to the end. I'm kind of a glutton for that kind of thing. And this one, I was just like, it's too much, too many butterflies. Sorry, that's a reference to something that happened before we started recording. But but I just powered through it. And I don't know if it was a Stockholm Syndrome thing or what. I was so impressed with it and into it by the end. Like, I kind of can't believe, especially knowing all of the troubles that they had in development, mm-hmm. and how many times the premise of the show changed. Mm-hmm. I can't believe that it's a show that I think functions pretty well and does a lot dramatically with this sort of Me Too plot line that obviously this is like a recent issue, but I already feel like I've seen a zillion narratives about that. And this one goes in a lot of places that I wouldn't expect it to. And I don't know. I was into it.
Yeah, it's so watchable. I get it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very watchable. That's the other thing. And like Billy Crudup is so great in it. Mm-hmm. Very fun, again, watchable, just super fun to watch. I don't know. I don't know. Did you guys have a eventual verdict on it after you had seen it? Because I know everybody was like, ugh, at first.
I mean, Dave and I watched it all. It definitely is a mess for sure. I mean, you certainly can tell that it changed directions like every couple of episodes.
See, I couldn't. I was looking for that too. I really couldn't. I was a little bit, I don't know, maybe I wasn't looking for the right things. I don't know.
I think it's a muddle, but it was a fascinating mess, I would say. And Billy Crudup is like certainly a standout, but I do think he was in a different show from everybody else.
Yeah.
Oh, I know. He's having so much fun though that I just like want to watch him doing his thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. And then that's a version also of like, okay, I'm watching all these rich people in Manhattan have problems, but at least I know why I'm watching these people and why I'm spending time in this sort of elevated milieu of characters.
Yes,
and there's
totally.
there's a class interplay between the different people who work at the station and everything. Like, that's another thing with The Undoing. It's like, the only people who aren't mega rich are just like ciphers in it. Mm-hmm. So it's, yeah, I don't know. I was happy to spend 10 episodes watching The Morning Show.
Yeah. I can't wait for it to come back.
I know. What are they going to do? anyway, and my plugs. Well, I have a podcast. Some people might know, some people still don't seem to know. Like, sometimes we will get messages from people being like, bring back hoodies. And it's like, we've been back with the podcast for almost 3 years now. But I host a podcast with Molly Lambert and Tess Lynch called Night Call. It's on the iHeart Network. We come out every Monday. We've recently been talking a lot about The Vow, and like a lot about The Vow. We're kind of still on it, though. We've moved on to other cults that members of The Vow have been in now. So, it's taken us down a path. And then, and also talking a lot about pyramids for some reason. Yeah. So we just kind of, you know, based on cues from our listeners calling in about stuff, based on like our own little internet rabbit holes, we just sort of make our way through weird corners of the internet and pop culture. And that's Nightcall. So,
woo. Pro con pyramid.
Oh, pro, definitely. But I don't think that they give you powers, which is what this lady Ramtha, who has a cult called Ramtha, or no, it's not, her name isn't Ramtha, but she channels a being called Ramtha. Mm. But she decided she could channel this being because one day she made a little paper pyramid and put it on her head, and then suddenly the energy was channeled.
I mean, everybody knows the pyramids are just interstellar communications for the aliens that seeded human life on Earth, but whatever.
And the fun thing is you can make one at home in 5 seconds.
Oh, paper pyramids. Oh, never mind. Dirty bunting.
Or you can make one out of volleyballs, but I'm not here to talk about The Vow. I'm here to talk about City So Real. City So Real premieres, as you are listening to this, tomorrow on National Geographic. It is a 5-part docuseries about Chicago and specifically the mayoral race, which, you know, obviously that's already in the books, but it comes from Steve James, who directed Hoop Dreams. There are a lot of reasons like that I can see people being like, ugh. Like it's 5 hours, and like, you know, it's not 5 episode hours. It's like 5.5 hours. And it's about politics, which, you know, it's less than a week until election day. And I feel like everybody's maybe not psyched to do more of that. And I get it. And I'm not here to talk anyone out of therapeutic cooking show viewing or supermarket sweeping. I loved the original. Team Tara.
Thank you.
Watch whatever gets you through this shittiest year. But whether you watch it now or in a few weeks or a few months, City So Real is totally worth it. It is long, but The Vow was longer. You have to wait a week between episodes. I mean, everything's shorter than The Vow. That like a, you know, volleyball tournament shorter than The Vow. The Vow kind of fell apart towards the end, in my opinion. City So Real does not do that. A lot of true crime documentaries, and this isn't like strictly speaking true crime, it's one of those like greater context historio-sociological documentaries, which is going to make it sound like homework. It isn't. Steve James knows how to give you like wonky process and man on the street stuff and not make it feel too, you know, frontline-y or independent lensy. Like, he's Steve James, you know who he is for a reason. There are a lot of reasons you could come up with not to watch this series is my point, but I think that you will enjoy it. It is like processy about Chicago politics. If you're watching it and you're like, where's the true crime? Because I did write this up for my true crime column for primetimer.com. It should be up by the time you're hearing this. We will link to that in the show notes. But like, it's Chicago politics.
Yeah.
It's as a New Jersey native, like the crime's baked right in. It's fine. If you only want 2 hours worth of either the Laquan McDonald case or crazy corrupt municipal politics, I have some recommendations in that piece for more self-contained documentaries. But City So Real is really good. The last episode is like a time jump into 2020 and sort of events unfolding on the ground. And I recommend it, but maybe you want to see how everything turns out. And then if you're like, say, packing for a move to Manitoba, then you can watch it while you're packing. For my plug, in the event that this Primetimer piece is not live by the time I write up the show notes for this episode, I also did, for my true crime newsletter, Best Evidence, a short list of the best films from Kartemquin, which is Steve James's base, basically.
Oh, nice.
That is on the newsletter. That is free, as the newsletter has pretty much been for most of this year, because not everybody wants to pay to read sometimes grim content, but we will link to that in the show notes if you're impatient. That's bestevidence.fyi.
First of all, you know, to close the loop on the butterfly story, there's just a lot of butterflies when I was walking about a week and a half ago through the migration of monarch butterflies from Mexico to Canada or Canada to Mexico, whichever way they were going to. So now you know the full story about the butterflies.
I thought it was funny as a non sequitur.
It was funnier, probably.
I just like the idea of somebody shouting too many butterflies about the morning show, regardless of context.
There's the title. There's our title. Too many butterflies. Put it in the books. Here's what's coming up on all the things. On the next Extra Extra Hot Great, it's 6 feet over again, where we take a character who died on a show, but now they're coming back from the dead.
Yep.
And then we're going to give you 3 episodes that feature them as dead characters now in whatever show that they were in.
Yep.
And then the next week after that on Extra Extra Hot Great is going to be the Frontline Shot Clock, where Sarah challenges to watch a frontline that's been sitting on our DVRs for sometimes over 2 years or so, and see how long we can make it through an episode of that misery porn show. On Extra Hot Great Primes over the next 2 weeks, we have the Extra Hot Great American Pop Culture Quiz Show episode. That's going to be next week. It'll be on both the Extra Hot Great feed and the USA Quiz Show feed. It features Tara, Sarah, and filling the Blankenship chair, Mark Blankenship. 3 rounds of Extra Hot Great-ish pop culture trivia.
It was very fun.
And yeah, that was fun. And then the week after that, we've got Netflix's Dash and Lily with Esther Zuckerman, Thrillist senior entertainment writer. And speaking about the Great American Pop Culture Quiz Show, next week, as you hear this, will be the start of season 2.
Woo!
Our first episode features Alan Sepinwall reunited with his old podcast buddies. We got Daniel Feinberg and Brian Grubb, and they fought it out. And it was really fun. They had a good time. We had a really good time.
I got to sit in as substitute score master, and that was a joy as well.
Yeah. So check all that out. All that starting next week. We're sort of off for election week. That's why we're giving you the quiz show. We decided to
anticipated not
going into the bunker. So goodbye.
Manitoba.
Today's extra credit topic comes to us from Don Ames. It is called Domestic Survivor, and he writes, due to the pandemic, the reality show Survivor isn't filming overseas for the foreseeable future. What domestic location should they visit, and what are some of the challenges they would participate in? I'll go first. I tried to think of a place where the contestants wouldn't be camping on sacred ground, or ground that was ecologically vulnerable, or both, or a place where they would be, you know, unlikely to run into people. I couldn't think of any, so I'm imagining a scenario where part of the San Marcos River, which is south of here, I think, gets shut down. And what is going to happen is they can camp on the banks. The water in the San Marcos River is not just potable, but I looked this up, 10 times cleaner than the EPA standard for drinking water, which means these contestants will be pampered relative to contestants in other seasons. They won't need to boil the water to use it. Definitely does get hot, but there's lots of shade. And literally all of the challenges will revolve around tubing, because that's what you do on the San Marcos River. You go tubing. Tube volleyball, tube polo, tube Quidditch. The worst part of this will be ending up miles away from your camp and having to walk back.
Can I suggest one?
Sure.
Tube battleship.
Great.
Where you get all the people on teams and they play battleship. They just face the other way.
If you're not familiar with this, it's just lazy river tubing. Like, it flows and you just get in a tube and you float. You can even get a tube for like your cooler and put all your beer in it. And then it has its own tube that you just drag along with you.
You can choose, like, you can do it all day.
Yes.
Like, you can do 2, 4, 8 hour rides and they just drive you up the river and you float back down to your car.
Exactly. So this season, instead of a torch, you get a tube. And when you get voted out, your torch doesn't get snuffed. Jeff pulls out a giant pair of scissors and he pops your tube.
Okay.
That is the tube season.
On the water? Because that would be kind of funny.
Sure.
If you're on the water when it happens,
why not?
You just slowly sink.
Yeah. Tubal council.
Yeah.
Or he has to float up to you and then boop, 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 boop.
Yeah. Okay. Great. I love how we're iterating on this. Okay. Emily, why don't you go next?
Okay. Well, I used to be a really big Survivor fan. I mean, I still am. I dip in and out of watching it. But early on, I remember after the Outback season, I asked myself, like, when are they going to do an Antarctica season? Which they still haven't done a cold location season. Have they? No. Maybe because you're more likely to die. That would be my biggest, my most likely guess.
Right.
But there are plenty of cold places in the United States, and I would suggest a Boundary Waters Survivor season, which would almost definitely end with everybody dying. I feel like some of the, I mean, I'm trying to think of the competitions that they could do, and all I could really come up with was like tapping for maple syrup. This is just kind of turning also into like a Canadian Survivor season, which I'm not against either.
It kind of sounds like you're basically trying to pitch the Rideau Canal Festival.
Totally.
Yeah, I mean, there could be sled dog races and everything. I mean, I don't know. I would just like to see people building shelters out of ice, making like little beaver dam type structures or something. Like, none of it would be very sexy, but I was, from the beginning of Survivor, I was like, when are they going to do the cold one, though? Mm-hmm. So this seems like a great opportunity.
They'll probably do the cold weather one when science develops a cold weather bikini, is my guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's part of it.
You could do cross-country skiing because it is surprisingly hard. It seems like it would be easy, but it's a pain in the ass. Cross-country
skiing. Yeah.
Sarah.
Well, since people are going to die, they could be on the next season of Survivor Greenwood Cemetery. So look, it's close to 500 acres. It is possible to get lost in it. I have done it. There is housing, that, you know, the big tombs with, it's like two people and then the rest of the family like moved away. And there's like a house with the best views in Brooklyn. Nothing's happening with it. You will have to fight semi-habituated to humans raccoons for the housing. That's challenge number one. There are catacombs. Innumerable challenges. There are geese who are not habituated to humans at all and are fucking dicks. Many challenges there. Trees that grow down to the ground around entire families, long lost. There are water features. There are beehives. You can do a lot of challenges. Is this necessarily super respectful to all of the dead? No. But I feel like a horror, like a competitive reality show with horror elements, which we've talked about several times on this podcast and struggled with why they don't work. This is how you do it. Mm-hmm. Plus, you get some free like landscaping labor and sunken headstone location services out of the contestants. The viewers get some history and education. There are a lot of like fathers of baseball. Boss Tweed is buried there. You can do
Leonard Bernstein.
Yeah. And the lady who was on stage when Lincoln got shot.
Oh, damn.
The American Cousin actor. And Basquiat. So bunch of things you can do with that. Mm-hmm. And like seances. That's a challenge. I'd watch it. Ooh. Either it would be spooky or it would be stupid.
So, competitive, you know, seances?
Spooky. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it works, but that's what I'm going with.
Who can get the biggest dead celebrity in their seance?
Exactly.
Love it. Dave.
I just want to tag on to Sarah's. I don't think, unless you've had a personal run-in with a goose, that you realize just how big of a dick geese really are.
They're such dicks. They're, thank you.
Like, to put it in a modern parlance, like, they're the Karens of the animal kingdom, right? They just, like, they'll walk right up to you in your face, yell at you, kind of, you know, poke you with their bill or whatever. Like, they're true dicks. So.
I'm going to say almost all waterfowl are unpleasant.
Yeah,
but
ducks
geese are
pretty
like,
bad.
Ducks can be reasoned with.
Turkeys are jerks too, but they're not waterfowl. But like, geese are particularly aggressive, I feel. So anyways.
Yeah.
All right. So mine is called Survivor HEB. It could be, depending on who wants to, it could be Survivor Wegmans, Survivor Ralphs, mm-hmm. Survivor Piggly Wiggly, whatever you got for a supermarket in your neck of the woods.
Publix with an X.
No, not that one.
Oh, I see.
So any major grocery store chain, and it has to be filmed on Fridays between 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. or on Saturdays from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Mm-hmm. Because that's when you get the most inexperienced shoppers and the most annoying shoppers that will share space with you. Old people. People that are...
They should be like, the most experienced.
They should, and yet they're not.
They're the most experienced. Oh. They have the most time spent in grocery stores, but they're also the sort of worst shoppers insofar as how they shop. So we'll get into that. Yeah. In a second.
And also they've been in stores that long because they're fucking paying for things with checks. Like that's going to rack up some minutes.
Do you accept promissory notes? College students.
Yeah.
You know, first year away from mom and dad, don't know how to navigate a store.
True.
Bachelors, mm-hmm. You know, you just got a mix of a lot of bad shoppers there. Yep. So it brings up some challenges just for shopping, but then you add the survivor element to them. So I got a couple games to give you a flavor for one.
Okay.
The first one is, what is the quietest hem you can do and still get the attention of a group of frat boys blocking the aisle by the bulk frozen burritos, that kind of thing? Like, what is the least amount of conflict
I love this.
You can do to get past people who are blocking the aisles because there's like seven of them broing out about which Hungry Man burrito set they're going to get.
Yep.
Now, my other one is you have to recruit four raisins from inside of the store, and you have to find the ingredients to a dish that they barely remember from their youth, like that nobody makes anymore, that's fallen out of fashion, like Lord Walton's pie or something like that. And then you have to make it with the ingredients that they tell you at one of those hot plate samplers at the end of the aisle, but with them at the next aisle over shouting directions to you en masse. Unorganized,
at the same
just
time.
Chaotic, just like, all right, old people, let this guy know how to make your Lord Walton's pie, and we'll see, and at the end, they judge it, and then whoever makes the best Lord Walton's pie wins.
Yeah.
So stuff like that. So it's a little bit supermarket sweepy, Tara, so I hope you're excited about
this. I am, very.
But also because there's a lot of people that will enter the store with a mask and then immediately pull it down over their nose, you could also die in this one,
That's
too.
True.
So keeping with the theme of today's ideas, you could die at Survivor HEB as well.
Well, I was going to say there's a whole COVID aspect to this that could be taken advantage of, like, you know, a kind of human body scale game of operation where you are trying to keep a 6 foot distance from your fellow shoppers. And if you, you know, go closer, like you can do it with a radar or something like that, or maybe like a giant
body
skewer,
alarm,
like the kinds that keep pigeons off of buildings.
You know those things they give toddlers to walk in, like a big ring?
Yeah.
Just make one of those for 6 feet.
Exactly. Yeah. And if it touches anything, then you're out.
Yeah.
Like, that's a great idea.
Yep.
All right.
Cracked it.
This is gold. I'm sorry that we gave it away for free. It is time for the Extra Hot Great Canon. Presenting this week is our guest, Emily. Emily, take it away.
Thanks, everybody. Well, last time I did not nominate something for the canon, but I think I did. I was circling around trying to do a Halt and Catch Fire episode, and then I gave up because I just like that whole show too much and I couldn't decide on one episode. But lucky for me, Halt and Catch Fire's fourth season was one of the first things that I comfort binged at the beginning of lockdown. So it's all rather fresh in my mind. And the fourth season is really, really excellent and one of the best last seasons of any of my favorite shows. And so I am nominating the second episode of the fourth season, Signal to Noise, which largely, I mean, it could have been a bottle episode. It's a plot, if you will, circles around one phone conversation that appears to last about 24 hours between two of the leads, Joe and Cameron. And it's sort of interesting because, I mean, obviously, Halt and Catch Fire is a show. It's a I would say there are four leads and Toby Huss. Like, Toby Huss is like the bonus lead. And among those four, it's like any great show where you're like, I'm a Donna, I'm a Cameron, or whatever. And I would say that in the past, I've mostly said that I'm a Donna and a Gordon because they're the married couple who by the fourth season are divorced, and Donna has gone into venture capital, and Gordon has got brain damage, and they've kind of gone opposite directions. But the two other characters, Joe and Cameron, are kind of the more, I would say that they're the more kind of, what's the word I would like? They're kind of the most extreme of the characters. Like, I identify with Donna and Gordon because they're kind of just like these unsung workhorses, and they never get any of the glory for anything. Like, there's always somebody that's like flashier that they're like. Gordon is paired with Joe in the first season, and then Donna works with Cameron for a long time, and Cameron and Joe are such like A-type personalities. They're very like very very much like cultivate a kind of mythology around them. And in this episode, like, they've been romantically involved on and off throughout the entire show, but in this episode, like, Cameron's coming back from a divorce. She had been working in Japan, and they just catch up on the phone like two people who have known each other for over a decade and have, you know, at times been involved, at times have been, you know, mortal enemies. And they have this very long, rambly, extremely relatable conversation that kind of anchors the whole episode. So I want to play the first clip, which is, so the episode starts off with the beginning of the call and goes to opening credits with Cameron falling asleep because they start the call at night, and she's on the phone with him and he's talking, and she falls asleep with the phone in her hand. And then we come out of the opening credits and yeah, we have this.
Hello? Hello? Hello?
Oh, hey. I was just making some tea. Do you want to know what your Hawaiian name is?
Okay.
It's Kamalonu. See, there's this whole website where
you didn't hang up?
Well, yeah. I had to tell you my Hawaiian name.
What is it?
It's just Joe, but with an I instead of a J.
Aioi?
I actually think that it's Yo. Right?
Right. I'm not calling you Yo.
Yeah, and it kind of goes from there. And a lot of it becomes this sort of, hey, like, I found this thing on the internet. Just sort of, and it, in a way, I was watching it again, and I was just thinking so much of the way that the conversation plays out, where it goes from like silly random things to like heavy, heavy life stuff, just feels like what it feels like now to be online all the time, which of course a lot of this, this season is pointing towards, because at this point we're in the early 90s and the internet is kind of starting to look the way that the internet that we recognize, especially if you grew up in the 90s, looks, and it is more, it's not like, you know, ARPANET or whatever. Like, we're talking about websites, we're talking about search engines and stuff like that. So that's all, we're kind of at the dawn of that, and this sort of just sort of like hanging out online, in this case on the telephone line, is sort of the rhythm of this conversation. And so yeah, they kind of just kill some time, and Cameron is obviously coming, they're both kind of coming out of these, they're both kind of in these not so, they're both kind of flailing a little bit. They're coming out of big life developments and not sure what to do next. And I think, again, like I was saying, like, these are characters that have developed a sort of cult around them and have made themselves like deliberately unknowable. And so, and like even to each other. And I think that's this next clip is, it's a little long, but I think it's really notable because it's like, these are two people who've known each other and worked together for a decade, and yet there are some areas, like in some of the most personal and important elements of a person's life that they haven't ever really even talked about with each other and are hearing about for the first time. And this is a long clip, but I just think it's really lovely acting on both of their parts as well.
Look, I'm 45. I've got no family. I work in a basement. People aren't exactly lining up for my spiritual guidance.
Is that what this is about?
What?
Well, you said you didn't have a family. You don't want one, do you?
My dad died last spring.
Oh, God, Joe. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And you know what this is like, but you just start to think about everything. And when I was 15, I made this vow that I would never have kids. All because of him. He was just huge and imposing.
You know you're huge and imposing, right?
He made me feel small, like I was just less than nothing. And I never wanted to risk doing that to a child. And then he died. And I'm like there at his funeral. And there's hardly anyone else there. And he felt like the small one all of a sudden.
And that made you want to have a family?
It made me realize that we are different people. And maybe I would have been better. You ever think about kids?
Yeah. I just sprung it on Tom one day. Didn't even really think about it, just let's start a family. Such a stupid thing to say to someone if you're not ready for them to take it seriously.
And he did.
Oh, I mean, he lit up. I'd never seen someone so happy. And so we started trying. And it didn't work. And I was relieved. I was relieved that Mother Nature made a decision for me that I was too spineless to make for myself. And I realized I was just going through with it because I didn't want to disappoint him again. Sorry, I shouldn't have said that.
You know, it is so good to actually talk to you.
You too.
Yeah, so it's light stuff. I should also mention that this is it could have been a bottle episode, and I would have been totally happy just watching Lee Pace and Mackenzie Davis on the phone with each other. There's also a subplot that is basically the start of a plot that figures into the rest of the season, where Donna and Gordon's daughter, Haley, basically, while being suspended from school, comes up with this idea for a Yahoo-esque directory. And it's also like, it's also a great plot. And I love the actor who plays their daughter, whose name I'm totally blanking on right now. But, and it's sort of the kind of the beginning of that character coming into her own. So it's not like the other stuff is inconsequential in this episode. I just think that this being the through line of it is just such a, it's such a kind of confident stroke from the writers and obviously from the actors. And yeah, just this opportunity to kind of like find a different dimension in these characters who are kind of the most iconic of this show. And as much as the show has iconic characters, because I still think it's like largely underappreciated, but kind of finding this this vulnerability to them in a really unexpected way and having them find it in each other, which is just a joy to watch. And I get very, very emotional when I watch this episode. And then there are several interruptions also during their phone conversation. And one of them is when Cameron finds out that she is her game that she's been working on forever is being delayed indefinitely by Atari. And so Joe pens a statement for her, a statement. And then they eventually both have to get off the phone for a minute. But and we can roll that clip.
Listen, I know it's hard to swallow this right now, but you're so good at what you do.
Joe.
No, really. Don't let that asshole take that away from you. He's a parasite you create. You make something out of nothing, and I have always been in awe of that. And not to ruin the moment, but I really, really gotta piss.
Oh my God, me too. Okay.
And they eventually end up, of course, at each other's door after 24 hours on the phone, which is also extremely hot. But that's Signal to Noise. I love it very much. It was a joy to watch it again, probably for like the fourth or fifth time. So, yeah.
Thank you very much. I think Dave and I should go last since we watched the show and Sarah didn't. So I'm curious to know what her thoughts were on this coming in sort of cold. So, Sarah, why don't you go first?
Yeah, I enjoyed this. It was like being dropped into the middle of it is always sort of interesting to try to like get a handhold on like why is this canon worthy to someone like me with no context. But I think we've all had those like world of two conversations on the phone. This is like this is something of an artifact of the past. But this makes me think of like at the beginning of my relationship with my husband, just sort of like carrying him along on a car trip. And you know, just having him on the phone and like, we weren't necessarily even saying that much all the time. We were just hanging out while I was in the car and he was not. It made me think of like the many friends I've had in my life with whom I would silently watch TV on the phone, and that like bubble weirdly of closeness, and particularly at this time in human history or sort of remote history. I think this was really an excellent pick that had an emotional resonance over and above what it would have had in the before time, this episode, because of how much like relationship time we're all spending with each other in that way versus just like literally hanging out. You have to find other ways to do that and promote that closeness. So I just found that very evocative. And I just liked, I liked looking at it. I liked, you know, watching basically search engines being invented. I discovered in someone's Twitter bio the other day that their Twitter bio is like a quote of me saying that I've been online since minutes after Al Gore invented it. So, which does sound like something that I've said a bunch of times, but was also like, you know, it's funny because it's true. I'm an old, and so looking at the internet and some of these conversations about like with this trip dude and just like the ways that the women are just getting like, you know, talked over and excluded at the lunch table, and the ways that like the ways corporate speak can just fucking chill the blood.
So circle back and drill down.
Oh God. I just like, I did have to pause it at that point and just be like, because hi, Jason, you don't know who you are actually. Take care. Good luck. We won't be touching base on John from Cincinnati or anything else. Yeah, this was really quite something to watch. And as many know, one of my criteria is, do I like let it click over and keep watching the next episode, which I completely did. This Yay! Show has been on my list to start watching for a while. So eventually I'll get around to doing that maybe next week when I'm in the bunker. But for now, this was a delight to watch and to see how it may have gained some depth since it aired, and even, you know, perhaps unbeknownst to the submitter. So thanks for submitting it. It was interesting and quite emotional for me also.
Yeah, my pleasure. I love that you watched the next episode. One of my favorite things is turning people onto this show. It's a delight. So, yeah.
Well, you did it. I hope you're happy. Actually, I do hope you're happy.
I'll go next. Yeah. There was a lot in this episode to like. The stuff with at Donna's office, I mean, the boss pitch, as soon as he starts and he's doing his GPS thing, I just turned to Dave and was like, Toby Huss is so unappreciated. Like, he's so good. He see him here and then he's like, and he's the dad on Dickinson. Like, he's so good. Like, what can't he do? Literally, what can't he do? I mean, he's so natural as that guy. You know, he's so bombastic. He's the Texas guy and he's, you know, doing his whole spiel on behalf of these guys who are clearly, you know, the idea guys and more reserved, and that's his function here. And then we find out later is the other function is that he needs the money and this is, you know, he wants the finder's fee and blah, blah, blah. But the two of them, like the history that he and Donna have, that she doesn't want to say no to him, but she knows she has to, and it's all over her face, and he knows her so well, he can tell that she's going to say no. I mean, just all of the acting in this episode is great, but I especially love that moment too. And yeah. I also felt for Haley, the high strung, high achieving nerd. Oh my God. Like,
I just think she's so, like, I've never seen, I remember after that season aired, I was just like, I've never seen that kind of kid in anything, in a movie or a show. And yet I knew those kids. I probably was that kid at certain times. Mm-hmm. Like, it's such a realistic performance of, you know, somebody who's probably a little spectrum-y and like completely trying to figure themselves out in the midst of it, and like not in a completely confusing way. And she's so good. And when she breaks down crying in the car, I just, like, my heart breaks.
Yeah, totally. Were you going to say something?
I was going to say that. Couldn't recall the name. Susanna Skaggs. Is there?
Yes.
Susanna Skaggs. Yeah.
And when Gordon is like trying to comfort her and say, like, it's not a big deal if you cut class, just don't be dumb about it. And that's what sets her off. It's like, oh, I get it. Like, I felt that so much where it's like, the, you know, that's not what you need to hear in that moment. He can't, being kind is what makes her, like, if that's what triggers her to start crying. And also, like, when he's talking to Donna later and saying, you know, it's hard for Haley to be the person in the family who's not the child that needs all the attention, because the person who's not in the episode is Joni, played by Catherine Newton from The Society. Uh-huh.
Yep.
she's the problem
sassy
child.
Teen.
Exactly. Anyway, there's and Donna, you know, trying to do the right thing by Tanya, her assistant, giving her this promotion, and then because of fucking Trip, having it just blow away, and then having to be the person to tell her, like, oh no, they're putting training wheels on you, even though you totally don't need them. And, you know, trying to soften the blow by making the training wheels be Boz, like, maybe it won't be so bad. I mean, so all of that is great. But of course, the phone call is the centerpiece of the episode, and with good reason. And just, I mean, even though that clip in the middle was long, like, just hearing it, those two actors they're so natural. Like, there's nothing actorly about this performance, especially considering that you know, they're not in the room with each other, I assume. Like, they're just it feels so real. The direction is so great. And, you know, as you said, the fact that they are still finding things to say to each other after all this time together that they don't already know, you know, those conversations can still happen, and that part of it feels real too. But ultimately, on a superficial note, when they got to the end and then they're, you know, they go to a diner. I was like, God damn it. What I wouldn't give to go to a diner at the end of an all-nighter, like a few weeks ago.
Lee Pace.
Well, or anyone, yeah. Honestly, I would
Coca. Who cares?
I was working on a freelance piece a few weeks ago, and it ended up taking like way, way, way longer than I thought. And I pulled like a couple of near all-nighters back to back, and I finished like 4 a.m. the day before it was supposed to file. And Dave stayed up with me in solidarity because he is nice.
Oh,
but then he said, it feels like in another time, at the end of this, when you finish, we would have gone to a diner. And then ever since he said that, it's all I've been able to think about, because he's right. We would have.
Oh, my God.
But yeah, so seeing them do this in this episode was like, ugh, it's so true and it's so sweet. And then, you know, the capper on the episode being, so what do you want to do now, is perfect. So
yeah.
When we got to the end, I was like, oh, that's an interesting choice, because if I were going to make my first submission, I'd probably be something that was more Donna Cameron heavy, because I loved their relationship. Mm-hmm. But I also love this phase of the show, too, when they're doing their different things. So this is an excellent pick and a great presentation. So thank you, Dave. Yeah.
Okay, so first, Sarah, if you're going to watch this show, I am totally serious. You don't need to watch the first season. You can just start with season 2.
I have heard that.
Episode 1.
Thank you.
Like, it's not like... Yeah, you need to know some of the character, blah, 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 blah. Really, like, it's a different show starting Google with it. Season 2 with the same characters, and the dynamics are so much better, and the storylines are so much more thought out and considered that really, skip season 1, do yourself a favor.
Okay.
I would say that this episode has more weight because of the first season and because of how bombastic Lee Pace's character is in the first season, but
I think you get those.
Fair point.
You get those notes. You'll get those character notes.
He gets
pretty
a headset, like, you know, in season 3, I think. So.
I mean, you know the analogs just by watching this, who's supposed to be who, right, in the tech world. So even if you don't get the, if you don't hear them playing, you certainly understand the notes that have been played once you start watching the show. Emily was saying, you know, you're a Donna or you're a Gordon. I'm going to say, and for this show, a lot of the times I'm the computer, because that's what I really loved about this show. I mean, Emily's argument, and I totally agree with it, that this episode has a lot of very considered heart to it. And I agree, but I also really enjoy how this show sort of magically mixes and plays with the technology timeline, where a lot of things happen before they did in real life, and a lot of things are happening at the same time that sort of happened in succession, really, and things like that. You know, that Haley is doing a Yahoo type of thing while, you know, somebody is building a GPS system, and somebody else has got the beginnings of like a Facebook or MySpace kind of thing happening. It's all happening at once rather than happening, like, you know, like 7-8 years apart and stuff like that. I really enjoy the lesson that Gordon learns that happens time and time and time again on the internet, is don't build your business on somebody else's platform. Whether you're an ISP, you know, getting their bandwidth from a bigger pipe like MCI, which happens to his ISP. Mm-hmm. Basically, MCI says, hey, why don't we sell to the end user? And then that's this episode, Gordon discovers that they're not going to give them any more bandwidth. You know, and more recent ones would be like all those sites of a kind, upworthy, and all those kind of sites that just fed off Facebook likes. You remember when every site on earth had Facebook like button because you had to, and then that algorithm went away and changed, and suddenly all those sites went from 1 million hits a minute to 2 hits a minute, because it's just like they built their whole business on getting traffic from Facebook, and Facebook turned it off, and then overnight, boom, all those sites disappear. So this episode, I feel like, is, you know, telling that story, telling an early version of that story, and I enjoyed that. And, you know, the show does that a lot, obviously. You know, hindsight is 20/20, but I enjoy seeing it and seeing how they just sort of dance with the dates and the performers and all that kind of stuff. But yes, the phone call is the heart of this episode. And I think maybe, like, there's a good possibility they were on the set together doing that.
Oh,
just once off camera talking it out, right? Like that happens all the time. It's a heightened dialogue, but it really still feels like a TV version of two real people catching up.
Yes.
Right? In the middle of a show that you think is all about technology, obviously, that has even more impact, right? I was with Tara. I was like, well, let's, that wouldn't have been the first episode that I would have thought to pick. And sidebar, somebody just yesterday or day before sent in another episode of this show to
Sit
in for the canon. So we'll let it sit for a little bit, but there's another one coming from season two, which is the transitional season.
I mean, that was the other place I was looking was in season two.
There are lots of options.
Yeah.
It's such a good show.
Gordon getting lost in the garage is one of my favorite things to happen on this show.
It's a show that was overlooked. And I think probably a lot of it has to do with a lackluster season one. And, you know, not a lot of people gave it another chance when it actually got better, but it did. And it became so better drawn as it went along. And everybody became so much realer. And even if weren't in the trenches at the beginning of everything like I was on the internet, you know, as you get along in season four, you're seeing much more familiar beats with site analogs and behaviors on the internet and what became sort of the modern 2.0 internet that most people sort of got started with. So I thoroughly enjoyed this. It also made me really want to go to a diner and have those big fat steak fries you can't get anywhere else made properly except at a 24-hour diner.
As Laid by James is playing on the speakers.
Tara did comment in that. Aw. Yeah. That song. A diner.
Great song.
Everything.
Great song.
Yep.
So, I did enjoy this episode. And thank you, Emily, for bringing it to the table. So let's put this to the official vote. Sarah D. Bunting?
Yes.
Tara Ariana?
Yes.
And me, I will say yes. So that's 3-4-3. Woo! That means Halt and Catch Fire, Season 4, Episode 2, Signal to Noise. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It's time for Winner and Loser of the Week. Tara has the winner.
I actually have a winner and an honorable mention, which I will mention first. Niecy Nash has signed to host a daytime talk show. I love this for her. I think this is something that is kind of perfect for her. I'm not worried at all about her career. I think she will continue to act and be amazing, but I think she will be completely fun and hilarious hosting a daytime talk show. And I only want good things for her. Everyone knows that. So yay for Niecy Nash. But my actual winner is Stav Letts Flats, a surprise winner for Best Comedy at the BAFTAs this year over season two of Fleabag. It has been renewed for season 3 at Channel 4 and also at HBO Max, I assume, which is where we watched the first two seasons earlier this summer when it landed on HBO Max. This is the show created and starring Jamie Demetrio as the titular Stav. Also in it is his sister Natasia Demetrio, a.k.a. Nadia from What We Do in the Shadows, the TV show. I forget if we've ever talked. Have we talked about this show before?
Yes,
okay. It's really funny. If you haven't watched it yet, you should watch it. It's super funny and super dumb. It's a show about it's not even a show about a confident idiot. It's a show about a very insecure idiot who's trying his best, but is so dumb and useless that he screws up all the time. So yeah, it's about a show you should watch. If we already talked about it, I won't repeat the premise. So yeah, good for Stav Letts Flats. Hooray for season 3.
And loser of the week.
Speaking of confident idiots. We come not to praise Quibi, but to bury it because it's dead. R.A.P. Quibi 2020 to 2020. I got a fair amount of mileage last week out of claiming that I killed it because I was like, I wrote this very considered piece for Primetimer that was like, Quibi has a true crime problem. And then I was like, emblematic of their approach generally. Blah, blah. And then I had a bunch of actually pretty decent ideas for what their true crime content could have been instead. And then as a joke, I was like, maybe they should call me because they seem to not understand what their format is good for. But they didn't. They went tits up instead. Good luck, Quibi. We look forward to maybe two of your shows being restitched back together and appearing on Netflix.
Yeah.
Is that a possibility, really?
No, it's just something we've been joking about.
No, it is a possibility because I have read that apparently they never actually owned the rights to any of the content. Like the content creators retained the rights somehow. So it could
good
happen.
Good for the content creators.
Yeah.
Man.
Yes. So
at least someone in there was smart.
Yes.
Speaking about someone in there being smart, you know what time it is?
You're welcome.
It's game time. Man, oh man, this season is going long. This is the 12th game.
Wow.
12th game of the season. The scores are Tara 4, Sarah 4.
Oh my God.
Now you guessed 3.
Oh my God.
Very tight. Tara or Sarah wins today, they will win the season. Today we are playing a game for Hoopleheads from Lauren, who earns herself an extra credit topic. We also have to thank at EHG Assist for their help filling out this question set. In a game for Hoopleheads, I will read you an insult given on a scripted TV show, and you give me the insulter and insultee characters for 2 points each.
Ah.
Oh.
If you need a hint, I will tell you the show, after which the answers are worth 1 point apiece.
Okay.
Now, due to the math of how this turns out, I don't care if you ask for the hint or not, how you do it. Basically, okay, if you know one of the answers right away, it's worth the same amount of asking a hint and knowing them both later. And presumably, if you know one, you know the show, so there's no use asking for the hint. So my advice to you is, if you know one of the answers, just say it right away. You'll get your points, your 2 points.
Got
versus
it.
The 2 points after the hint.
Okay.
For both of them.
Got
Make
it.
Make sense?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Mostly. Okay. Steel meal situation, please, Tara.
This is going to be quick. I am the only one with steel meals. I have 7.
Okay.
Plus an extravaganza gong.
That could be the advantage you need for this final game. Let's throw it to Picky to see our playing order today.
We will start with Tara.
All right. Our order today, Tara, Emily, Sarah, 36 questions, 2 Grossos Equalizer Challenge Zones worth 6 points, splitting the difference.
Ooh, okay.
Between, doubling and normal.
Okay.
Are we ready to play a game for Hoopleheads?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Yes.
Good luck, everybody.
We go to remind you, I am going to redo the insult. You want to name the insulter and the insultee.
Got it.
Starting with Tara.
Yes.
You stink. You are a senile buck-toothed old mummy with bony girl arms, and you smell like an elephant's butt.
Okay, the insulter. Okay, the insultee is Monty Burns. For 2 points?
Yes.
Okay.
I'll accept 2 answers here.
I think it's Bart.
It could be Bart or Homer. They co-authored it, but I think it's mostly about Homer, but we're going to
get okay.
So 4 points.
Okay.
To Emily. Singing. Oh, blank is a bitch. She's a big fat bitch. She's the biggest bitch in the whole wide world.
I'll ask for my hint. I have no clue.
That is from the show and later on the movie of South Park.
Oh, I mean, heavens, I don't know.
Because it's like the blank. I'll give you a hint. It's the blank in that blank. Oh, blank is a bitch. She's a big fat bitch. She's the biggest bitch in the whole wide world.
Yeah.
Any idea?
I don't know.
Okay.
I have no idea. Sorry.
Anybody know that one?
Kyle's mom.
Kyle's mom is the answer there.
Okay.
1 point for Emily there. Sarah. And then there's you, a fucking breadstick in a bow tie. You pasty face cocksucking.
A breadstick in a bow tie?
A fucking breadstick in a bow tie.
That's great. I am stealing that. I am going to assume that the insulter is... my God, well, this really is Deadwood. And of course, the character's name has fallen out of my head. So in order to stall, I'm going to think about who he might be talking about when he's talking about a breadstick and a bow tie. Perhaps the insultee is Bullock. Okay. So now I'm not sure about the insulter.
Now, at this point, you can still, if you want, ask for the hint. Like I'm saying, you can use your hints however you want. If you want to answer one incorrectly, ask for the hint, take a crack at the other, have at it. I'm letting you decide how things go.
Then perhaps I should ask for the hint, is what I'm hearing.
Your hint is Boardwalk Empire.
Yes, glad I.
Now you burn the insult-er. So you have to name the insult-e now.
So the insult-e is, breadstick and a bow tie. Shit. I guess Nucky.
You are correct. That is 1 point. That was Jip Rossetti saying that to Nucky.
Sure.
Oh, that motherfucker.
Tara.
Yeah.
Could you have been born blank and not egg hatched as I have always assumed?
Boy, none of that is sounding familiar to me.
It's funny. I knew this one right away.
Can I have the hint, please?
This is Deadwood.
Oh, great. Everyone was insulting everyone on that show all the time.
Could you have been born blank and not egg hatched as I have always assumed?
Okay. I'm going to guess that the insulter is Swearengen. Okay. Is the insultee? Is Bullock?
No, this is a demonstration of the hierarchy of Deadwood. This is Barnum saying that to Richardson.
Sure.
All right, back to Emily. Copernicus called. Turns out you're not the center of the universe.
Ooh.
Copernicus called. Turns out you're not the center of the universe.
I'm going to need the show again.
The show is so Frazier, and I ought to know I'm Frazier. So who said that to who?
Copernicus called, you're not the center of the universe. I'm going to guess that Niles said it to Frazier.
Opposite.
Oh, no.
Frazier, I would have guessed the dad saying it.
No, he wouldn't. He wouldn't drop a Copernicus reference. Not Marty Crane. Damn, I even probably watched every episode of that show, so I should have gotten these. But oh well.
All right, back to Sarah. And what was it exactly that led you to hitting it off? Was she ill, or did her father witness her father committing a crime, or was she temporarily blind?
I need the show, please.
Parks and Rec. So, okay. You can answer both parts. Kind of a stab at the insulter, but I think you got a pretty good chance of the insult deal on this show.
Do I? I don't remember anyone's name. It's been months. Months, I tell you. I am going to say that the insulter is Leslie Knope. Insultee is, I don't know, that guy with the teeth. I don't know. I don't remember.
Somebody's
the show.
Getting insulted in Parks and Rec. It's got to be Jerry.
Jerry.
Oh, the Jerry.
Tara.
Yeah.
Good to see you. But if you're here, who's guarding Hades?
Boy, that sounds familiar. What's the show?
Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Okay. That's the insulter is Holt. And the insultee is Wunsch. Okay.
Correct. Well done.
Wow. Nice.
Back to Emily.
Okay.
Horoscope. What's that? A telescope that can see only your face?
Oh, that's a good one.
Take a stab or ask for the show.
What's the show?
The show is Full House.
Oh my God. Okay. If I don't get this, I'm gonna be really, really ashamed. I'm gonna say that the insultee is Or the insulter is Stephanie. And I'm going to say that the insultee is Kimmy Gibbler.
Yeah.
Yes.
Nicely done.
Okay.
Millennial power.
Yeah.
All right. For Sarah D. Bunting, I hope you were paying attention last week. I feel bad for you, says person one. Person two, I don't think about you at all.
That's one of the best insults of all time.
It's very good.
I guess Sarah D. Bunting wasn't paying attention.
No, she wasn't.
She never saw it on Twitter 5 million times either. Wow.
Okay, let me read that again. There's two people talking. I feel bad for you. And here comes the insult. I don't think about you at all.
I need the show, please.
Mad Men.
Ah. I feel bad for you. I don't think about you at all. Okay. The person number two is Don, yes? And the insultee is, I don't remember who it even is. Pete.
Oh, that's Ginsburg in the elevator with Dawn.
Oh, right.
Her
okay.
friend Ben Feldman. Sweet, sweet face.
Back to Tar.
Yes?
I have lost all my skills, and now I know how it feels to be utterly helpless like you and your sister.
Oh, no. Yikes. What's the show?
Schitt's Creek.
Oh, okay. Okay. I'm going to guess, is the insulter Stevie? Okay. Is the insultee David? Okay.
Moira Rose to David Rose.
Oh.
Back to Emily. I keep my body like a temple, says person one. Person two with the insult. Yeah, open to anyone, day or night.
Oh, is this the Frasier one again?
There's no repeats before you answer.
There's I'll no give you that repeats? Info. Okay, because yeah, no, that's such a Roz insult. it would have been anyway. I don't know. Give me the show.
The show is Golden Girls.
Yeah, of course it is.
Oh. Keep my body like a temple. Yeah, open to anyone, day or night. So who was the insulter there and who was the insultee?
The insultee is Blanche. And the insulter is, I'm sorry, who's Betty White's character's name again? It's been so long since I watched.
I don't.
Yeah, you can't give that to me? Okay. Yeah. I don't know.
Do you know any of the other character names? Just throw something out there.
No, I'm having a hard time right now.
It's going to be hard to answer if you don't know the character's name.
It is.
Any guesses sorry. There?
Sarah knows.
I think it's Sophia.
It is Sophia.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And here, Sarah, here is your actual question. Oh, look at that. It's an ad for a fucking weight loss center before and way before. Now, here's the thing. Two possible answers for the insult E. There's two insult E's here, but I'll accept either one or both if you want to get the answer.
Okay. Do I get anything extra for both?
yeah, you get one Dave point.
Sarah, oh, so many Dave points, Dave by the point. Way.
Why not? I'll shoot for it. I believe the insulter is Mr. Tony Soprano. What? Okay, you better give me the show then.
The show is The Sopranos.
Oh, shit. I should have said Junior Soprano. That's what I meant, but I understand. I believe the insultees are Tony and Bacala.
Bobby is that
Bacala.
Bobby?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll give yes. you Bobby. That was Polly to Bobby and Vito.
Such a Polly.
Oh, Vito,
insult.
Right.
Tara.
Yeah.
I'd like to meet your mother and shove you back up inside her.
Wow.
Well, that's from The Wiggles. Just kidding. That's not my answer. Boy. I need the show.
Superstore.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Okay. Jeff and Cindy. Mm-hmm. I don't know anyone's name on that show.
Dinah and Sandra.
Nope.
Or Dina. All right, Emily. This is my favorite insult of the game, I think.
Uh-oh.
I think what he meant to say is that he wished mom gave birth to a can opener because then at least it would be useful.
That's good.
I'm going to shot the door. Is it Michael Bluth, the insulter?
No. No, it's not.
Okay, so what's... So then what's the show?
The show is Succession.
Oh.
So you need to answer the insult E.
Is it Roman?
Oh, Roman is the insulter. That was to Kendall.
Oh, that could okay. go anyway,
yeah.
though.
Well,
yeah.
All right. True.
Sarah, taking us into our score break. I thought I smelled cookies wafting from the ovens of the little elves that live in your hair.
The little elves, I just have no idea. Could I have the show, please?
The show is Glee.
Uh-huh. It doesn't help. Okay, so let's say that the insulter is Sue.
Hey! Nice.
Wow. Was the one character name that I knew. So the insultee is obviously Bob.
Will was the one okay. getting that jab. All right. Let's get the scores, please, Tara.
Well, this is very exciting, Dave,
yes.
because I have 7 points, but Emily and Sarah are tied with 4 points Ooh. Each, which means they wow. are going to collaborate in the Grossworth Equalizer Woo. Zone. And if they win, they will split 6 points, which means we will all be tied up.
Oh. Tara gave all the explanations, so I'll just ask collaboratively. Here's your first decision you need to make. Do you want to go with older cards or newer cards?
I'll go for the newer ones.
Wise choice, I think.
Good luck, everybody.
I'm going to ask you six questions. If you get three of them right, you get to split your 6 points between you, and you're answering collaboratively.
And if you get all six of them right,
we'll double that. Here we go.
This could change everything.
What sitcom's writers adopted two rules as a reminder not to wallow in sentimentality? No hugging, no learning.
Can I answer? Or we're doing this
together,
right?
This is Seinfeld, so if you agree, yeah. Yes.
Seinfeld is correct.
Woo!
What critic did Roger Ebert finally pick to replace Gene Siskel as his co-host?
Richard Roper.
Correct.
Nice.
What star of Desperate Housewives once danced and sang as a love boat mermaid?
Is it Nicolette Sheridan?
Longoria? I don't know. I think Sheridan's correct. Let's go with that.
I have no idea.
That's your answer?
We'll guess that. Sure. Yeah.
Neither one of you were in the ballpark. Terry Hatcher.
Oh, right.
Not Thatcher. Thatcher's different. That doesn't exist. Okay, here we
go. Doesn't matter. You only need to get one more right.
What government document did CNN's Candy Crawley read to viewers straight off her computer screen on September 11th, 1998?
I don't know. Do you?
Government document?
It's a little news sneaking into the TV category.
Is it something to do with the Clinton scandal?
Yeah, I was going to say, is it the Star Report?
Oh, that's a good guess.
That bitch was long, though. I mean, I don't know what else it would be.
Is that a... Oh, yeah.
The Articles of Impeachment?
What do you guys think?
I don't think did the Articles of Impeachment, they hadn't been out yet. I'm going to say the Star Report of those two.
Okay. Fine with that.
Yay!
Hey!
We did it!
Yay!
Correct. That means everything's tied up now.
That's right.
Yeah. How exciting. All right, let's get back to it. Tara?
Yep.
If she were a spice, she'd be flour. If she were a book, she'd be two books.
Oh, I know this show, but I can't place it. What is the show?
Bob's Burgers.
Of course. Okay. Boy. Okay, the insultee is Tina? Shit.
The insultee is hard.
Okay, the insulter is Louise.
Yes, Louise to Jessica. That was a kind of
tough Jessica, one. Sure.
Mm-hmm. All right, Emily, question 17.
Spread eagle.
Spread eagle.
If you're worried about criticism, maybe a diet is the best defense.
Show, please.
Arrested Development.
Okay. Insulter is Jessica. Or sorry, what am I talking about? Yeah.
Who's the insultee there?
I
think you knew it, just gave the wrong name, I think.
Yeah, there. I know. My brain was in another place at that moment.
Emily's the highly suggestible type.
I don't know. Sorry.
All right. If I told you the insulter was Lucille Bluth.
Lucille, yeah.
The insultee was Lindsay Bluth.
Okay.
Who was very thin and always told to go on a diet.
Yes.
Sarah D. Bunting, isn't there a slanket somewhere you should be filling with your farts?
Oh, my God.
First of all, yes.
In fact, there is. I will need the show, however.
The show is 30 Rock. A TV show resplendent in insults. But that's the one we
that
struck
is a
out.
Very good one.
It's true. Oh my gosh. Your farts. I feel like the insulter is Jack.
Good instinct.
Insulter is pretty difficult in this one because it's not a main cast member, but the insultee is, which is still your guess.
Okay. The insultee is, well, Kenneth?
That was Selma Hayek's character to Liz Lennon.
She was dating
okay.
Jack.
Yes.
She was Jack's girlfriend. So.
Tara, this is question
19.
My days of not taking you seriously are certainly coming to a middle.
What's the show?
Firefly.
Oh. Okay. The insultee is Wash. Is that a character on Firefly?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's
the Alan Tudyk, right?
Yeah.
Okay. The insulter is Mal.
Yes.
Okay.
Correct. 1 point.
Wow.
Emily, just because you shot Jesse James doesn't make you Jesse James.
I don't know. What's the show?
The show is Breaking Bad. Just because you shot Jesse James doesn't make you Jesse James.
It's a... I don't... And that's a show I've watched every episode of. Is the insultee Jesse? No, I don't...
Still got a crack at who's insulting. Who's doing the insulting?
I guess I'm going to guess Jesse again. I don't know.
That's what I would
have done. When it comes to knowing who's a tough guy and who isn't, that's Mike to Walter.
Oh, man.
Sarah, it's pretty dark outside. Maybe he thinks he's asleep.
Maybe he thinks he's asleep.
Yeah.
I don't have the foggiest. Show, please.
The show is Roseanne.
Pretty dark outside. Maybe he thinks he's asleep. Okay. I think the insulter is Roseanne. And the insultee then, perhaps, is David.
That was Darlene to Mark.
David's brother.
Is there a David?
Yeah, there's a David.
Yay! I knew a thing. It didn't matter, but I knew it.
There still is a David. He's still on the Connor sometimes.
Oh, good.
Tara.
Yeah.
Oh, like you'd recognize a vegetable that wasn't wrapped in a Monte Cristo sandwich.
Show.
Archer.
Okay, the insulter is Archer. The insultee is Pam.
Correct. Mallory. Yay. To Pam. Mallory.
Ah.
All right, Emily. Oh, it's you. I thought it was a man wearing your clothes.
Show, please.
Okay, here's a good hint. Downton Abbey. Who is the insulter on Downton Abbey there? Who is the insulter on Downton Abbey?
I watched like 3 episodes of Downton Abbey ever. I'm afraid I'm going to have to beg out of this one.
Just.
She's got nothing.
Damn. All right. That's the Dowager Countess,
Dave's
the Lady Mary.
Oh, right. Okay. See, I wouldn't have remembered
her
name.
And not to Sarah Bunting. What is she doing?
Speaking of Sarah Bunting, I think Picky looks favorably on you here. Nice dress. Good to know you've seen the softer side of Sears.
Ah, the softer side of Sears.
This is something you have said on this podcast. So if you don't get it, I'm taking away that Dave point.
I don't. Fair enough. I will get it. I don't think I've ever said it, though. I'm pretty sure that is Cordelia Chase to Willow on Buffy.
Nice.
4 points. Tara.
Yes.
She's so cold, I bet she has her period in cubes.
Oh, wow. Wow. Hint. Show.
Absolutely fabulous.
Okay, I was on the wrong track. Is the insulter Patsy? Is the insultee Safi?
Correct. As
Edwina. There it is.
To Safi.
Okay.
Emily, phone call for you. It's Tom Jones. He wants his pants back.
I'm going to guess the show. What's the show?
The show is Friends.
Oh.
Phone call for you. It's Tom Jones. He wants his pants back.
Okay, so the insulter is Chandler. And the insultee is... Phoebe? No.
It's Ross. Ross.
Okay.
But still got 1 point there. All right, take us into our second score break. Sarah, should I talk slower or get a nurse who speaks fluent moron?
Slower, get a nurse
Good
who
clues
speaks
in there.
Fluent moron. I'm gonna need the show.
The show is Scrubs.
Oh, I was thinking it was something totally other.
What were you thinking?
I was thinking it was House.
Oh yeah, right. No, yeah.
Oh yeah, okay. True. I thought it might be Scrubs. The insulter is well, actually, no. Let's start with the insultee, who is fuck, I don't know anyone's character names. The insultee, let's say, is Turk.
The insultee is not Turk.
Okay, the insulter is that doctor. You know, the redhead who's in Wall Street. I don't know. That guy.
He's got a name that sort of fits him in this context. I'll give you that hint for free.
Dr. Dickhead?
I don't know. So close. Dr. Cox.
Oh yeah, Dr. Cox. Shit.
All right. I was like, that's Dr. McCoy?
No, who was the insultee?
Oh, JD, sorry. Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Well, it's very close. Sarah D. Bunting and I are tied with 11 points each. Emily just behind with 8.
All right, that means Emily, you are solo in the gross worthy.
Good luck.
Good luck. Good luck.
Okay.
Do you want the newer set again?
Sure, yeah. Okay. Worked okay for me last time.
Here we go. Good luck.
Good luck.
Which Gibb brother was reduced to appearing on Punky Brewster after his singing career faded? Ouch. Which Gibb brother?
Barry? I don't know.
I mean, you had a 1 in 3 chance there. Andy.
That would have been my second guess.
He's not in the Bee Gees, but okay.
Okay.
What reality show star famously threatened to pee in her rude house guest's bottle of Jack Daniels?
When is this deck from?
This is mid-2000s.
Mid-O's?
That just means that's when the set was published, you know.
Right. I don't know. It's probably somebody from the real world whose name I don't know. I'm guessing. A bottle of Jack Daniels. Yeah, I don't know.
Guesses?
Sharon Osbourne?
Sharon Osbourne, yeah.
Wow.
All right, 4 questions. Need to get 3 right. Who was nominated for a Best Actor Emmy for 8 Simple Rules in 2004, despite appearing in only 3 episodes that season?
Bob Saget? Wait. I don't know.
John Ritter.
Oh, John Ritter. R.I.P. Okay.
Speaking of things with John Ritter, what Three's Company star, not John Ritter, I just gave that away, after a bitter contract dispute, did the cast refuse to work with?
Oh, I don't have any idea.
Suzanne Summers, and that puts you out of contention for points, but...
too bad.
A valiant effort. Oh. Tara.
Yes.
Everybody's got 3 questions left.
Okay.
Son, you don't have bad luck. The reason bad things happen to you is because you're a dumbass.
Okay, I'm going to guess that's Red Foreman, and the insultee is Eric Foreman.
From?
Wow.
From that 70s show.
70s show, correct. 4 points. To Emily. Well, well, well. Look what the cat cleaned up, showered, exfoliated, powdered, lipstick, Gucci'd, and dragged in.
I'm shot in the dark that it's the insulter is Blair Waldorf from Gossip Girl.
No, incorrect.
Totally
guess.
What
I would have guessed. Guess.
Okay, what's the show then?
The show is Will and Grace, and we need the insult to E. It was being insulted.
Is it Karen?
Oh, Karen is the one insulting to Grace. Karen to Grace there.
Okay.
Sarah, 2 people talking here. Sometimes I'm ashamed God made me a man. I don't think God's doing a whole lot of bragging about it either.
I don't think God's doing a whole lot of it. I feel like I should know.
I gotta give you a little hint here. You might know this from recent experience.
Recent experience?
Yes.
Huh. Recent experience? God's doing a I might know this from recent experience. I don't think this is where you're going with this, actually, but I think that the insulter is Veronica Mars. Okay, show.
Cheers.
Oh. God's doing a whole lot of bragging about it either. Okay, so the insulter is probably Carla. So the insultee is what you need for me now?
That's correct.
Norm?
You were correct about Carla, but it was Cliff who was getting that.
Oh, yeah, 50-50 shot.
Tara?
Yeah?
What are you laughing at, Jolly Green Jizz Face?
Okay, that's Veep. The insultee is Jonah. Who is insulting it? It could literally be anyone on the fucking show. The insulter is Lena?
Okay. Good for four. Nice. Well done. Back to Emily. You crush your wife during sex and your heart sucks. Boom. Roasted.
Yikes. Is the insultee Kevin? I don't know who the insulter is. I have no clue.
This is the one guy that says boom roasted on the show.
I don't know.
Michael Scott.
Sorry, guys.
To Stanley. Michael Scott to Stanley. Sarah. Short one. You four-eyed fuck.
That is short.
You four-eyed fuck. Is the insulter Tony Soprano? Oh, no, wait. There's no repeats, right?
Yes.
Correct.
Okay. You four-eyed fuck. I'm going to need the show.
The show is Curb Your Enthusiasm.
All right. I don't know that show at all. So is the insultee Larry David? The insulter, I guess, is Benson. I don't know other people in that show.
Any guest star here?
Susie?
Susie, yeah. All right. Everybody's last question. Let's get the scores, please, Tara.
Okay, Emily has 8 points. Sarah has 12 points. I have 19 points.
All right. Here we go. Tara.
Yeah.
You love your children. It's your one redeeming quality. That and your cheekbones.
Tywin Lannister is the insultee. What if that was right? That would be impressive, huh? Is the insulter Tyrion?
You said Tyrion.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I misheard.
Oh.
You are correct. That was Tyrion to Cersei.
Oh.
With okay. The cheekbones.
I see.
1 point.
All right.
Very well done.
I'll take it.
Emily, you should have been on the other side with me and your daddy. You'd still be able to shoot people and be an asshole. Your two favorite activities.
What's the show?
The show is Justified.
Oh my God, I don't know anything about Justified. I couldn't even tell you a character's name on it, so sorry.
Tara, guesses?
It's probably Boyd to Raylan.
Correct, Boyd to Raylan. All right, last question of regulation is for Sarah. You look like Carrie Russell after she ruined Felicity. And a sitcom you watch. From a sitcom you watch.
Okay.
Okay.
Short list.
Yeah. That's why I
still
it.
Need a. I still need the hint though.
Okay. The show is Happy Endings.
Yeah.
No. Look like Carrie Russell after she ruined Felicity. Who could that even be? Okay. I think the insulter is Penny. And the insultee is Max?
Dave.
Dave.
It's Dave.
Oh, Dave.
The blonde.
But you still got your 1 point there. And that is regulation. Let's Woo-hoo. Hear the final scores, please, Tara.
Okay. Emily finished with 8. Sarah has 13. I have 20.
All right. So Woo! Tara takes it. But let's play this tiebreaker for a future steel meal. First person to shout out either. Either insultee or insulter, I'll take them both, but you have to say which one you're shouting out. You're the AT&T of people. Everybody's in on this. You're the AT&T of people. It's a good burn. I like that. Any guesses before I reveal the show? Sarah, Emily, Tara, anybody?
No.
Okay.
No.
Remember, you have to name who you're shouting out, but the show is Community. Community. Insulter, insultee?
I'm going to say insultee is Britta.
Yes, it's always Britta. Community. That is the perfect answer. Emily wins the steel mill for her valued guests in next season, but today and this season belong to Tara Ariano.
Well done, T-Bone. History repeats itself. Try and you
succeed. Yes! Hurrah!
Oh, you woke up early.
Nothing's gonna keep Tara down. I'm sorry, Dougie. I woke you up for your tender slumber, and now you're confused. And now you want those snacks so bad. Well done, everybody.
Good game.
Thank you, Lauren.
Thanks.
Well, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We undid the undoing before going around the dial with stops at Supermarket Sweep, Archer, Revolutionary Girl Utena, Morning Show, City So Real, and in a sentence I wrote at the last minute to work either way the decision fell, Emily made us all halt and catch fire after her argument for the fourth season episode Signal to Noise. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's Game Time from Lauren and EHJ Assist, and the winner of the season. Next up, it's 6 feet over again and Frontline Shot Clock on Extra Extra Hot Great. And on the next EHG Primes, the Extra Hot Great American Pop Culture Quiz Show, followed the next week by Dash and Lily. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
you four-eyed fuck,
Sarah D. Bunting,
Rad,
and Emily Yoshida.
Boom, roasted.
Oh, and fine. We'll take that. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
Hey, we can still talk trash behind his back, right?
Let's circle back on that later.
Oh, really? I think now's the perfect time to drill down on it.
I always prefer to drill down after I'm circling back.